We're 18 and a half minutes, no, make it 18 minutes, 15 seconds away from NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. I always get teased about my precision with time. When you work in radio, that kind of comes with the territory. All of us talk, you know, down to the minute when we share time here at KPCC. Also, just want to let you know there is a chance that we'll be back at some point during the noon to 1 o'clock hour. The word is that President Trump's defense team likely will only take a couple of hours of their time today. We'll follow NPR's analysis potentially between noon and one, and then that would mean that we resume with the BBC and our regular programming at 1 o'clock right here on 89.3. But time will tell. San Francisco is going to be going to a no-cash bail system as a condition for pretrial release. The new DA in San Francisco, Chesa Boudin, announced this. It was actually something he ran on during his campaign for district attorney. So San Francisco is going to be using what it calls a risk-based system to consider if a defendant might be dangerous or if a defendant is likely to flee and not show up for trial. So what this is intended to address are racial and economic disparities that if someone is awaiting trial and has means, they can post bail and easily be released to come back. But someone who can't come up with the money toward the bail bond isn't going to be able to do that. The question is, do the benefits outweigh the downside of this? Joining us is Laura Bazelon, professor of law and director of the Racial Justice Clinic and Criminal Juvenile Justice Clinic at the University of San Francisco School of Law. Professor Bazelon, good to have you with us again on Air Talk.
Thank you so much for having me back.
I understand you didn't work directly on this policy, but you're a part of the new DA's policy team. So let's talk first of all about how this is work. How is the county going to determine the potential of the person to flee or to commit a crime while out?
Sure. So let's back up for a moment and talk about how money bail worked before Chesa Boudin abolished it. Essentially, what money bail did was criminalize poverty for the reason that you said, which is a wealthy and extremely dangerous person could buy their way out by simply posting the requisite amount, whereas a poor person who might even be wrongfully accused would have to languish in prison for months because they couldn't afford to pay. So it actually wasn't tied to dangerousness at all, which is one of the primary considerations under the state constitution for bail. So the way that the new policy works is it takes into account a number of factors. There's an algorithm that's supposed to assess danger, which, while problematic, has also proved to be effective in certain respects. There's also the input from the public defender in terms of the background information they present about the client. There is input, of course, from the assistant district attorney about the facts as they know them from the police report and other information that they've gathered. There's an assessment from the pretrial services officer who's interviewed the person who's accused. And then, of course, ultimately, the decision whether or not to grant release rests with the judge.
When you have a case of someone who is released, who in the past might have been held in lieu of bail, and that person commits a violent crime, you can almost say just law of averages, at some point that's likely to happen. Is the county prepared for the backlash to come from that?
I think anytime you make a change like this kind of a change, there is going to be a fear, of course, of that headline grabbing case. But I don't think that fear can drive policy when we know that the existing policy is not just a catastrophic failure and not directly tied to public safety, but also deeply racist and classist.
Well, and I understand that you don't want that to drive the policy, but is the city prepared, or the county, I should say, prepared for how to respond to that? I mean, what's the counter argument when that incident occurs that the county's going to need to make?
The counter argument to when someone is released on bail and then goes on to commit a new offense. I don't know if it's a counter argument, but of course, the response is to take them into custody. I think I should also add, though, that there are a number of things that can happen with respect to pretrial release. So a lot of folks think, oh, well, it's just a bunch of people accused of serious crimes roaming free. And in fact, there are a number of measures that can be put in place and are put in place to protect the public. So, for example, let's say you commit a crime and you have a serious substance abuse problem. One of the conditions might be that you have to enter a residential treatment program to get treatment, or vocational training if part of the problem is unemployment, or electronic monitoring that basically doesn't allow you to leave your house other than to go to court. So depending on sort of the seriousness of the offense and the risks, there are things that we can put in place to mitigate against them. And the other thing I will say is, of course, Chesa Boudin is going to detain people who are dangerous, who are so dangerous that they really can't be in a free society while the charges against them are pending. So it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's just a different way of assessing risk and protecting the public based on objective factors rather than pretending somehow that money equals freedom, and that is somehow good for all of us as a society and for public safety.
We're talking with University of San Francisco law professor Laura Bazelon, also with us from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, lecturer in law, police science, and criminal justice, Eugene O'Donnell. He's also a former NYPD officer and former prosecutor with the DA's offices in the Brooklyn and Queens offices. Mr. O'Donnell, a pleasure to have you with us again. And what are the ways this is working out in New York?
Well, I think the similarity, New York has just enacted this with California, is the total absence of community involvement. This is just an elitist-driven issue. You have think tanks that are driving this, and there's been no public engagement that I can tell. This is a reform by people who think they know best and have excluded communities. And I think if you had some of these conversations in public, you'd get a much better feeling for where the public's head is at. These are deliberately being done now, these reforms, to exclude the public. And at some point, you have to ask, who does speak for victims and communities? You have in San Francisco, you have think tanks, law professors, federal judges, the DA himself now, all on one side of this equation. Who's the victim advocate in that city? And we have the same kind of issues in New York. Who is going to speak for the victims? Who is going to speak for the community? And there needs to be some bail reform without a doubt. But what I object to, and I think you see now nationally, is this writing off out of the picture of anybody with any contrary perspective. San Francisco, I think, and like New York, there's a feeling on the part of the public that they can take some of these risks at this point because the cities are relatively safe. These are relatively safe cities. But we should never forget this is risky business, and you're playing with other people's safety. You're not playing with your own safety. The likelihood that the advocates are going to be affected by any of these reforms is low. The likelihood that people that have no voice in this are going to be affected is very high.
Professor Bazelon's argument was that even under cash bail, there really wasn't a big deterrent here as well, that, you know, if people jumped their bail, they'd be subject to arrest, but it's not like they'd forfeit it. Just your response to, you know, you see the fact that there should be some reform of the bail system. But what would be, in your way, a better way to do it?
I think it should be done publicly, and it should be done after great deliberation. It should be evidence-based. It should be analytical. It should not be this ideological push that we're seeing in San Francisco in particular, but other places as well, where you're just talking to an extreme part of the Twitter audience. You're not talking to ordinary people that live in neighborhoods. And there's no question about the fact some people that are going to be receive this capacity to be out on bail are going to commit some very, very heinous crimes, not against the advocates, most likely, but against ordinary people. They're going to go back to the most marginalized communities and present a risk there. So there's no question and no doubt about that. Some of them will be homicides. Some of them will be rapes. We have already in New York City the police commissioner under the de Blasio administration, no right winger, he saying that he's very concerned as we enter the new year. There's been a sudden increase in crime statistics in the city that seems to come out of nowhere. And remember, Larry, this is part of a perfect storm now. The police have now been marginalized. The police are no longer a force in either of these two cities and many of the other cities. So you have that dynamic as well. You have a court system that now has no teeth, that's a laughing stock. You have the bad guys who keep score of this, and you have ideologues. You have no, and they deliver.
Well, and we should mention that the San Francisco Police Officers Union has come out very strongly against this policy, believing that it is a threat to public safety. We're talking with Eugene O'Donnell, John Jay College of Criminal Justice, New York, Laura Bazelon, professor at the University of San Francisco School of Law. I'd like to hear from you. What do you think about San Francisco's move to eliminate cash bail for those awaiting trial and using a variety of methods to determine the risk of whether someone could be released or not? 866-893-KPCC. Back in 1 minute. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're just a few minutes away from NPR's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump. The president's defense team wrapping up their opening statements in a couple of hours is what the defense team has indicated. There's the chance we'll return and be on with you sometime between noon and 1 o'clock today on KPCC. Regardless, it appears that we will have our regular programming schedule at some point in the early afternoon right here on KPCC. We're talking about San Francisco's move to do away with cash bail. This is a campaign promise of the new district attorney, Chesa Boudin, who is now implementing this system to move away from cash bail. We're talking with University of San Francisco law professor Laura Bazelon, who's on the policy team for the new district attorney. Professor Bazelon, you want to respond to Mr. O'Donnell's comment that this is really done out of think tanks, ideologues, and really without public input from the communities involved?
Yes, I would like to respond. Thank you. A couple of things. The public was extremely involved. This was a grassroots campaign where Chesa Boudin went out almost every night for a year and spoke to community groups and addressed their concerns. And one of the central planks of his campaign was the abolition of cash bail. And to say that there wasn't a public discussion or strong community buy-in is to deny the reality, not just of his campaign, but the results of the election. To say that there's no empirical data to support the idea that money bail does not keep us safe and that eliminating it would make us endangered is to ignore reams of data. There's a recent study that just came out of the University of Pennsylvania studying a similar elimination of cash bail or semi-elimination by District Attorney Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, and it's been going on for several years, so they have data. And the authors found no evidence that replacing monetary bail and supervisory conditions with other kinds of risk assessments had adverse consequences, either in terms of failure to appear or pretrial re-arrest. And that's a study that went on for several years. And finally, I think it's really important to talk about this idea that who is speaking for the victims. One of the most famous cases in California in terms of reform for victims involves a young woman named Marcelle Nichols, and she was murdered in the 1980s by her boyfriend who stalked and abused her prior to that happening. He made bail after he was arrested for her murder and spent the next 2 years out on bail. And in fact, the week after he was arrested and released, her mother ran into him at the grocery store, and according to her, he stared her down. This was so traumatic for the family that they became advocates for criminal justice reform. And we have in many states, including California, something that's known as Marcy's Law, which enshrines victims' rights into the state constitution. And what galvanized this family, I think, was this incredibly traumatic experience where they lost their child and the murderer was rich. So he bought his way out and basically re-traumatized them over a period of 2 years.
So might we see then cases where people will be jailed who otherwise would have been released under this reform?
That is exactly my point.
Okay. Eugene O'Donnell, John Jay College of Criminal Justice, your response to that this may keep dangerous people from posting bail and being out?
That's disingenuous. This is designed as this is part of an overall attack on the justice system and the police to delegitimize their functions. And they should come clean about this. And citing Philadelphia on public safety is absurd. This is one of the most palpably unsafe cities, where you have tens of thousands of African Americans leaving every year, particularly more African Americans than anybody leave Philadelphia because there's a fear issue in the city. The city's closed down after dark. And by the way, this is true in hundreds of cities across the country where people are palpably scared to death on the street. San Francisco and New York, you have DAs. Most of the people who commit crimes are never apprehended. What are the DAs doing to solve crimes? All you hear about now from the prosecutor's offices is alleged exonerations of people and how they're going to do more to fast-track people out back onto the street. And this is just because it's they're governing through Twitter. It's talking to their subset of
well, and you raised the issue. This may be, you know, part of crime rates being in many communities at historic lows, particularly violent crime. Albeit, I understand Philadelphia, Chicago. You've got other cities with significant violent crime problems. But quickly, Professor Bazelon, got like 30 seconds here. Is that part of what has enabled this to happen? Is low crime rates?
That's part of it. And I think the other really crystal clear part of it is that massive numbers of people, not just in San Francisco and California and Philadelphia, but across the country, understand that mass incarceration is a colossal failure, that it's racist, that it's classist, and it doesn't make us more safe as a community. And so we are doing what we can to fix our broken criminal justice system. And that's why we elected Chesa Boudin.
Thank you very much, Professor Laura Bazelon, University of San Francisco. Eugene O'Donnell from John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, former NYPD officer, former prosecutor as well. Coming up, NPR's live coverage, Senate impeachment trial. And if it ends before 1 this afternoon, we'll be on with a part 2 of today's Air Talk on 89.3. Regardless, it appears we'll get to regular programming sometime this afternoon.